Today's program is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin wins more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Portia Wilson, and welcome to A Hungry Society, the show where we talk about dining, food media, and so much more. Today's guest is Yemi Amu, the co-founder of Oco Farms, Brooklyn's largest and oldest aquaponics farm here in Bushwick. She directs all of Oco Farms' programs, including education, designing and building projects, and community-related activities. She has facilitated the creation and maintenance of 20 edible spaces in New York City, at schools and community organizations, including a rooftop farm in Crown Heights and a quarter-acre farm at the Weeksville Heritage Center that included poultry and bees. In addition to her current work at Moore Street Farm, Yemi is part of the Northeast of Brooklyn Housing Development Community Healthy Food Initiative, where she manages two farms that source the Golden Harvest Food Pantry. Yemi grew up in Lagos, Nigeria. Yemi, welcome to A Hungry Society.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so happy you're here.
And me too.
And you made a face about the Moore Street Farm.
No, I made a face about NEPCO because I'm no longer working with them.
Formerly of NEPCO.
Yes, that was a great, 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 wonderful experience and partnership. But I've transitioned full-time to just doing Oco Farms work, so...
And Oco Farms is so cool. When I heard
Thank you.
It, I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. Why haven't I heard about this sooner? Can you tell listeners about Oco Farms?
Absolutely. So Oco Farms is an urban aqua farm, an aquatic farm. And we raise a variety of freshwater fish and vegetables and fruits and herbs and flowers in a recirculating ecosystem. So you can just think of it as literally that, an aquatic farm, a farm where fish and vegetables and all kinds of plants are growing in water.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm going to use like super layman's terms here.
Go for it.
And you can stop me at any time.
Go for
it. Imagine like a fish tank with a bunch of gorgeous fish and then like on top of that, a garden. And the garden runs off of the fish's like excrement pretty much.
Absolutely. So on our farm, the plants are not directly on top, actually. They're on the side. But it's the same exact concept, right? Where it's the water from the fish that feed the plants. Mm-hmm. And then in turn, what the plants are doing is filtering out the water for the fish. Mm-hmm. So it's this beautiful ecosystem of fish producing waste that's toxic to them, bacteria taking down, breaking down or decomposing that fish waste and turning it into plant food, and then plants taking up those nutrients, and you have clean water return to fish. So it's the same thing that happens in any natural body of water where you have fish growing. Yeah, I always tell kids, think about it. Does the ocean like empty out in order to clean water for the fish? No, because you have algae, you have microscopic plants, you have kelp, you have seaweed, you have all these plants that are actually living in the water that help filter the water for the fish, along with beneficial bacteria.
Speaking of kids, you do a lot of like educational work, like bringing kids to the farm to like see all the like plants and the fish and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. They're probably our biggest fans.
Yeah, it's got to be very exciting.
Yeah,
for them.
Yeah, they love it. I mean, it's New York City kids, so they come in and they're like, "Miss, where are the cows?" You don't have horses? I'm like, no. Well, we have fish. And they're like, oh, okay. okay. So yeah. They're a big fan. And just like seeing plants growing in water and being able to look at the roots and being able to taste the vegetables that are growing is always a great experience for them. Yeah.
And do you provide like your vegetables and your fish for like commercial purposes as well?
Yes. We actually do less of that now than we used to. We're restructuring a little bit and also expanding on what the role of an urban farm is, right? So a few years ago, we were very focused on just producing for restaurants, right? And then we decided that we wanted to do more than that. Like, our role is so much more than being able to produce basil or mint for restaurants. You know, we want to be a space where people are learning and being inspired and actually walking out of the space and knowing that you've gained something valuable. So we pick crops that we can also teach people about, that we can cook on the farm and teach people about, like, the medicinal benefits and how to cook it as well. So, and then we collaborate with, like, chefs and caterers, you know, like collaborating with my peers as well into just growing for us. So it gives us like a more space to be more impactful in the community. Because one of the things that I'm learning is that when you just grow and you sell to a restaurant, the impact is really small. But when people come on the farm and you do a cooking program, that's a larger impact you're having on people's lives. When people come to your farm because you grow this vegetable that actually makes them feel better. Wellness is also my background, where it's like, you know, I eat these vegetables and it actually impacts my health in a positive way. That's the kind of impact we want to have. So we're kind of restructuring to be more than just a farm that is growing produce for sale. We also teach. We teach adults. We have adult training programs. So we're trying to be, we're about growing community more than just like growing food to sell at a restaurant. I think that as great and as sexy as it sounds, I don't really see the impact of that on a larger scale.
Do you think that's the ultimate role of an urban farm, is to be like more about impacting the community around it than, you know, supplying tomatoes or basil or a very specific product?
Absolutely. I think urban farm can take whatever shape it wants, but what is unique about us is that we can teach people so much. We can impact the environment. We can show people how their decisions and the way that they purchase food impacts the environment. We can connect people to farmers. I think a lot of times when we talk about healthy food, we don't talk about the wellness of the farmer, the person who's actually producing the food. We're so disconnected from that. Right. We can never produce enough food to compete with people who are growing food upstate or on bigger land. But what we can do is make those connections for people. So when I tell people, this is what sustainable aquaculture looks like, where the bacteria is decomposing fish waste and is growing plants, and then take that connection and say, okay, so think about what happens in the ocean. Think about what happens when you take fish out of the ocean. What does that mean? Think about what happens when you pollute the ocean and then there isn't that bacteria anymore. What does that mean? Allowing people to make connections, improving the health of your environment and ecosystem, right? We're an outdoor farm, so we can have conversations about pollinators and talk to people about different types of pollinators, not just honeybees, you know? I think that is the real role of urban farm, connecting people to the produce that they grew up eating, you know, that they didn't know they could find. That's what makes urban farming unique to me. It's not proving that we can grow as much food as we, you know, as farmers upstate. Right. I don't think that.
And speaking of environmental impact, the water that you use on your farm is actually way more sustainable than a conventional farm, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely, because we recycle that water. The point of having bacteria decompose it and fish filter it is so that we can use the same amount of water over and over again. So aquaponics, which is the science, what it's called, what we do, or recirculating aquaculture, if you for a different term, is recycling water, which you don't do on a conventional farm. So we use about 80% less water to grow both fish and vegetables than a conventional aquaculture farm or a conventional soil farm.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
When we first met, I asked you like kind of what your goal was, mm-hmm. and you said to educate people mm-hmm. about farming. Mm-hmm. And I asked you, what percentage of people do you think used to know about farming? Mm-hmm. And you were like 100 because people had to farm to eat. And I was like, oh, right. And then I realized like how in this day and age, how like far removed we are as consumers mm-hmm. from the farming aspect of how we get our food.
Yeah. I mean, obviously not all of us are going to be farmers, but understanding how food is grown is very important, because if you don't understand, then you can't advocate for the right things, right? If we don't know the difference between fish farming and ocean farming and what the challenges are and what the opportunities are, then we can't ask for the right things, you know? Mm-hmm. If you don't know where your fish comes from and how it's grown, then you don't know if it's healthy or not. If you don't know how much water it takes to grow a certain crop, right? We're all about how healthy something is. Mm-hmm. Almonds are healthy and like nuts are healthy. But do you know how much water it takes to grow almonds? Like once we start educating ourselves, we make decisions that are better for the environment and mm-hmm. in turn better for us, mm-hmm. you know, as a people, as a planet.
Yeah. You have like a very interesting background, and I feel like all of these different things come together mm-hmm. to like for you at Oco Farms. And I read that you said that, because someone asked you, like, how did you find your job? And you were like, I didn't find it. I created it.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So it's been a really long journey for me. I started out working as a holistic chef. Mm-hmm. That was my first thing, is just teaching people how to cook and teaching people how the foods they eat can help support their health. And then it went from that to me just really going beyond that and saying, all right, well, great. People know how to cook, but do they know what to cook? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you find these things? And then at some point I realized that my clients, because I worked a lot with low-income clients at one point, and beyond what I was cooking for them and with them, they weren't necessarily making healthy choices on their own. Mm-hmm. And that showed me that there was a disconnect. And that disconnect was not really connecting with food. So I started farming initially so that I could teach my clients how to grow food.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I thought if they experience putting a seed in the ground mm-hmm. and watching it grow, they may not eat other vegetables, but that vegetable that they seeded, they'll eat. Right. And then it'll demystify vegetables for people, because I think what happens in this society, I grew up in Nigeria and I've lived here, is that in Nigeria, wealthy people eat junk food because it's imported. Wealthy people can afford Doritos and can afford potato chips and frosted flakes mm-hmm. and pizza and all of that. And the poor folk eat vegetables. Mm-hmm. Right. Over here, it's like the other way around. When you talk about eating vegetables, you're either vegetarian, which, I mean, you don't have to be a vegetarian to eat vegetables all the time, or, like, you're being white, do you know? And that's what I was coming across all the time. Like, I don't eat that food. We don't eat that. And I was like, what do you mean we? I grew up in a nation of 200 million black people, and all I grew up eating.
And we ate vegetables.
All the time. And we didn't make a thing about it. Like, no one, like, I didn't grow up with, like, oh, my God, I'm going to go home and eat my vegetables. It was just part of the food. It's just part of the diet. You just eat it and you don't even think they're eating vegetables. Because there are Nigerians who would swear to you they don't eat vegetables. But if you ask them what they just ate, it was like some leafy greens, like they just ate some kalaloo or like okra stew. And they'd be like, I don't eat vegetables. You're like, sure, okay. So I wanted my clients to see that, you know, it's not that fancy. It's not fancy. It's just lettuce. You put a seed in the ground, it grows and you eat it. And you have just as much of a right to it as anyone else. It's not supposed to be something that's for the privileged. Vegetables are not supposed to be for the privileged. It's not supposed to be for fancy, wealthy people. It's not supposed to be just for the educated. That's not the, it's food. Everyone has a right to it. So that was my original goal, is just to demystify. And then the more I started doing it, the more I realized that, you know what, this is what I should be doing. Like, farming is what I should be doing. It feels good. I started farming more and doing less of the, you know, nutrition education piece of my work, and then I got fired. And then, you know, after that, I was like, what's next? And what next was like, I really love farming. That's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to create my own. And that's how I started.
That's amazing. When you were talking, I was thinking of another guest that we had on the show who also does work with kids in the Bronx. Chef Marcus, and
I listened to that.
Yeah, and he was saying that kids, he'd be like, oh, this is a carrot, but it's a purple carrot. Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, why is it that color? Like, what is it? And he's like, it's the same carrot you're used to. It's just a different color.
Yeah.
So just like kind of, like you said, demystifying.
Yeah. Or that even like the original carrots weren't orange.
Right.
They were like red, I think, and then purple. You know, it was just, you know, so what we're eating now is not even what the original thing is. And when kids ask me questions like that, I always say, well, why are you light and I'm dark?
Wow.
They're like, why is this purple? I'm like, it's nature. Why are you light and why am I dark? And they always go, oh, okay.
Okay.
Like, nature comes in all varieties. They're like, oh, never thought about it like that. Mm. Yeah.
And I think definitely I 1,000% agree with you about like vegetables becoming like bougie somehow.
Yeah, like
when
what?
They were sustenance for a very, very long time.
Even traditionally for Black folk in this country, right? Like people had their own gardens. Like even after folks worked the field, they would still come home and they would grow these vegetables that connected them to home, mm-hmm. but also nourished the family.
Right. Right. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more Hungry Society and Yemei Emu.
Today's program was brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. What do you think of when you hear Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds, delicious, fresh and squeaky cheese curds, or deep fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Uplands Cheese, the farmstead cheese company behind Pleasant Ridge Reserve. I think of delicious stinky Limburger and its long storied history. I think of Dunbarton Blue, made by master cheesemaker Chris Raleigh. I think of Ross Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Championship Cheese, and Sertori's Black Pepper Bellavitano, the 2017 U.S. Championship Cheese. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, with lush grasslands and a glacial water supply that produce the very best milk. Fourth generation cheesemakers combine old world tradition with new ideas and the highest standards to make innovative cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
All right, we're back with Yemei Emu of Oko Farms, and now we're going to talk a little bit about dining.
Sure.
So you grew up in Nigeria.
I did.
I'm going to ask you this. Who makes the best jollof rice?
Okay. Nigeria makes wonderful jollof rice. Amazing jollof rice. Party jollof rice. Nigerians will know this. When I say party jollof rice, it's like the bomb. Because it's often cooked over like wood, mm-hmm. so it's smoky. But I really like Senegalese jollof.
Uh-oh, don't do that. You're going to get in so much trouble.
I really do. But Nigerian jollof is great. It's wonderful.
Do you have any early dining memories, like when you were growing up in mm-hmm. Nigeria?
So dining, like dining at home or dining out?
Either one.
Okay, so dining memories for me at home is always really interesting because my mom, we used to have dinner as a family, either evenings or weekends, and my mom always used to be so particular about the fork and knife thing. It used to drive me crazy because Nigerians traditionally eat with hands, and mm-hmm. I used to want to eat with my hands so badly. My mother would be like, if I see you.
That's funny.
Put your hand in the food. Yeah, we were very like fork and knife and all of that. And then I would go to my friends' homes and they'd be eating with their hands. I'm like, damn, you're so lucky.
And what would you be like eating at dinner?
So we would eat, like, my absolute favorite is eba and ila sipo. Ila is okra. It's like stewed okra with like crayfish and stockfish, which is like, and all types of different types of meat in it. Always my favorite growing up. And eba is kind of like, I guess it's like what the West call fufu. It's like a generic thing for everything that goes under the swallow is like fufu.
Right.
But it's actually cassava that's dried and fermented. And it's like in grain form. And then you cook it like you would cook farina. Or pounded yam, which is like yam, not sweet potato, but actual yam. Pounded in a mortar, I can't pronounce that word. Yeah,
mortar
and pestle. Yeah, ugh, love that. That was like my favorite thing. And then, of course, jollof rice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Did you go out to eat?
We did not go out to eat a lot because when I was growing up in Nigeria, going out to eat was like for like, you know, very special occasions. But I was telling Lexi, who works with me, that I was not a very active child. I did not like being active. I like to just sit in a corner in my book. And my dad used to try to get me into playing tennis. And the only reason I would agree to go to the tennis club is because there was a Chinese restaurant right next door. So I would literally be like, so can I go eat now? So that was my thing. Like tennis on Saturdays and I'd get to eat Chinese food. And it was a proper restaurant. So I got to feel grown up, you know, once, you know, every other Saturday, because I definitely couldn't have it every Saturday. But every other Saturday, I got to feel grown up and go to a restaurant and sit at a table and dine with adults. So,
I remember you mentioning that Chinese food in Nigeria mm-hmm. is very different than Chinese food here.
Yeah, very. If you're eating Chinese food, it means you're going to a restaurant, like a proper sit-down restaurant. So the environment is different. And the taste is different. Like the flavor profile is different. Things are definitely spicier.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, definitely more spicy because Nigerians like spicy food. So while I find American Chinese food to be sweet, Chinese food in Nigeria is like super spicy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's so interesting to me that your dining memories of growing up in Nigeria are Chinese food.
Yes, Chinese food, because that was my first exposure to eating out, and then pizza.
I think that's very common like around the world.
Really?
Especially like in the dinner that we met at mm-hmm. At our table, the question of, you know, your first taste of mm-hmm. a different culture's food mm-hmm. for a lot of us, it was Chinese food.
Yeah,
like I remember the first That's time I had Chinese food.
Oh, really?
And it was sweet and sour pork. Like, I think the sweetest thing you could ever order off of like a Chinese food menu. But yeah, it's very vivid in my memory.
Yeah.
Do you remember what you had or what was your go-to?
Oh, I don't at all. I don't. I think, okay, no, I'm wrong. Definitely fried rice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because as a kid, to me, rice was like the epitome of everything good to eat. So, yeah.
So tell me more about this party rice. Do you make it specifically for a party, or is it
oh,
just
the like party jollof rice?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So the thing with the party jollof rice is that it's usually made in like huge quantities. So it's served at weddings and like huge parties, and it's not cooked over the stovetop. It's usually cooked outside over firewood. In a large, I call it a cauldron, but it's not a cauldron. It's just a large pot. And that wood just imparts this amazing smoky flavor to the rice. Yeah, but it's not something that someone is just gonna cook for like a family of two or a family of four.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's usually special occasion rice.
Special occasion rice.
So how long have you been in the States?
Oh wow, I've been here since 1996.
Okay,
so June will be 22 years since.
Wow.
I've been here a long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've lived in the U.S. longer than I've lived in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice. And was it always in Brooklyn or?
Always in New York.
Always in
New York. When I first moved, I moved to Queens, Jamaica, Queens, Cambria Heights in particular. And then I lived in the Bronx for a little bit. And then I've been in Brooklyn for about 10 years or more now.
Do you have a favorite restaurant?
Ooh, I have a lot of favorite restaurants. Lately, Buka, a Nigerian restaurant, has become my favorite because I'm just craving Nigerian food a lot recently. So Buka is definitely my favorite. And then I just discovered Winsan, which is a Taiwanese restaurant that Lexi told me about.
Oh, wow.
And I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it so much. I love Asian food. That's like my go-to.
What do you recommend at the newer spot?
Ooh, I don't remember the names of the dishes. Lexi, do you remember?
There's a dish called Fly's Head.
Oh, yes.
Rice. It's like pork and rice. And it's kind of fermented.
Yeah, and tons of scallions.
This is Lexi, by the way, who works at Oco Farms, too. She's been sitting in and is joining in with some dining recommendations.
Beef roll. Duh, the beef roll is so good. And they have spicy peanuts.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
Like, nice.
It's like they went into my brain and they're like, what are all the things that Yemi likes?
Yeah, there's not a lot of Taiwanese food in New York. There's a lot in Los Angeles where I went to school, so I was really excited when I found out this place opened because I love Taiwanese food.
Nice.
But now they have it in Bushwick. It's really close to Roberta's.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's like around the corner.
It is around the corner.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
So I always ask this, but you can name names if you want to, but you don't have to. What's one of the worst dining experiences you've had?
So my dad is the one who actually introduced me to going out to eat restaurants and dining culture really big. And
In America.
But even when I used to go to the Chinese restaurant in Nigeria, he would take me. My mother was like, what? No. So when we moved here, he'd be like, yeah, you know, let's go out and eat. And we would go to, I'm just going to say it. Olive Garden. I didn't even know what it was.
Yeah.
I just was like, the whole time we were eating, I was like, this is bad.
Yes.
I was like, I didn't know, like, at 17, I just moved. I didn't know, like, what was what. I just knew that this place, I don't like this food. And I couldn't tell him that I didn't like it.
Oh, did the rest of your family, like, really like it?
It was just my dad and I. And that's something that we did for a bonding thing. Is like, he just believes in going out to eat as a way of exposing yourself to new experiences, mm-hmm. and it just makes you more open-minded and more flexible. That's how my dad thinks. Like, the more you open yourself to eating different types of food, the more creative you are, the more open-minded you are.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Olive Garden, and I was just like, oh, God.
You were like, no.
No.
You were like, Italy? No. You're never going to Italy.
And the funny thing is, I was excited to go because mm-hmm. you see the ads on TV. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know. And I got there. I was like, this is just not good food.
Did you ever tell him that you didn't like it?
No, I did not.
He still thinks you liked your trip.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was okay. I'm just like, thank you, Daddy.
Are there any other experiences that you were just like, not happy with?
I'm not a big fan of diner food.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just don't like it. It's just bland to me. Yeah.
Like particular dishes or?
I don't know.
Like
just,
the whole, the
I just
whole
think
concept.
The whole concept. It's like, just like, I think it's intentionally done not to have flavor because you're just, I don't know. It's just always bland.
Mm.
And the worst thing for me is like bland food. I just can't do it.
So what do you like make of the dining culture in New York City? I mean, you've been in the area for 22 years
mm-hmm.
now, and in different boroughs. Like, so I feel like you've seen kind of the whole thing evolve.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of it?
Well, it's definitely dynamic, right? Like, there's no food that you can't find in New York, which is amazing. That's what I actually love about New York the most.
Mm-hmm.
So for an African girl who loves Asian food, New York is like it. I can eat Malaysian. I mean, I can go to Queens. Sometimes my brother and I just go to Queens and we just like, we'll just walk into anywhere and eat. And I've eaten Russian food. I've eaten like Filipino food, Taiwanese food I got introduced to recently, really good Senegalese food. So in that sense, it's really dynamic and super interesting, and I've made really good friends around food because my friends are just as adventurous I am around food. If you love to eat, New York is the place to eat. I really love that about New York, and it doesn't have to be expensive either. Mm-hmm. You can certainly go expensive, but I mean, you can go to Flushing and eat like really good food, or even Chinatown and eat really good food. But then the other aspect of it that I'm not as familiar with is like, this is what's trendy. That I ignore, especially when you're making like another person's culture trendy. It always makes me uncomfortable.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a pitfall of food media.
Yeah. And then like what's considered high dining, or what's, you know, it's like if it's not French food, it's not, you know, not high dining.
Actually, like a week or two ago, there was a headline that said African food will be big in 2018, which,
sure,
what, first of all, there's so many things wrong with that.
Yeah,
at least like just so many things
I'm
wrong.
Just in 2018 too,
like. Yeah, just 2018. Once, you know, January 1st 2019 hits, we'll pick something else. But also like all of Africa.
Yes,
that's a lot of different cuisines.
Yes, actually it's interesting you say that, because my mom sent me a video, a BBC news clip on how Nigerian food is like the new trend in London, and everyone's trying Nigerian food, and everyone loves jollof rice. And I was like, oh, so now it's our turn. Thanks.
Right. You know? As if Nigerians haven't been there eating food for a long time.
Yeah. And who gets to determine what that is? You know, who gets to determine what's good food? What's the new trend? I feel like the people whose cultures are the new trend don't have a say.
Right. That is so true. So my last question for you, if you could have your last meal in a restaurant, where would it be and who's invited?
I don't know if I would want my last meal in a restaurant, though. I think I would want it at home, and I would want definitely my friends to be there, and I would want them to cook. Yes. So I would want my mom to cook. My friend Shalini, I want her mom to cook. Her mom is Indian. And her mom's food is so good. I would want my friend Aki to cook. I would actually want it to be the food of the people that I love.
Like a banquet?
Like a banquet, yeah. Yes.
A big potluck.
A big, yes. And then maybe we can go have ice cream afterwards.
And then go to the ice cream
shop. And then go to the ice cream shop. Yes, and have ice cream.
Are you drinking anything while you're eating? Or?
Ooh, tequila.
Tequila? Okay.
Yes. And there has to be a lot of wine because my mom is all about the wine.
Yeah. Any particular tequila that you like?
To be honest, I don't really know. Like, my friends recommend and I just drink what they recommend.
Well, there you go. Everyone brings a dish and a bottle of tequila.
Yeah,
that is a great way to go out.
Yes. And yeah, I would like you one day there cooking. Yeah, we just want my friends like cooking up a storm, and we'll all just sit and drink and laugh and then go out for ice cream.
Yeah. And then that's it.
That's it. That is, what else could you want? Yeah. And my brother definitely have him there. Yeah.
So how can listeners find out more about Oko Farms, and like how can they support?
Oh, you can visit our website at Oko Farms, which is OKOFARMS, okofarms.com. You can find us on Twitter, but I never upload Twitter. Instagram, I'm most active on Instagram, at Oko Farms. You can find us there. And on our website, you can learn more about what we do. We have in-school programmings. We have farm-based programming. We'll have produce up and the types of produce we have up coming soon. I'm going to be doing more dinners with Yewande because the ones we did went really well. And then we're also going to start like more culinary workshops. We're going to be focusing more on actually preventive health and, you know, focusing more on people with dietary related illnesses and how you can use food to support your health. Because that's my background. That's where I started. And I'm finding myself shifting more towards that. And so it's going to be really exciting. I'm going to be partnering with people and making it happen. So as we have that information come up. And then we have workshops on aquaponics coming up that people can sign up for.
That's so exciting.
Yes. And we even have a training program.
Okay.
Yeah, we've been doing it for, I think, 3 years now, 4 years. It's 7 month training on the farm, which is really cool. People get to see, people get to experience not just aquaponic farming or aqua farming, but just experience being a farmer. You know, all of the triumphs, the beauty, the challenges that come with it. It's a really cool experience. It's
life-changing. You said once that patience is something you've learned in farming.
Absolutely. Patience, and I'm a Virgo, so control is really big for me. And that is the one space where I do not have control. I say this to my trainees all the time, that your role is to be an observer and to facilitate. Like, what, you know, the plants are going to be what they are. The fish are going to do what they do. Nature is going to do nature. Your role is just to be an observer and a facilitator. And it really helps, especially when you're doing, you know, organic farming, which is what we do. We have to be organic, because it's just the nature of aquaponics where you're dealing with living things, the fish, so you can't, like, add things, no pesticides and stuff. So in order for you to have a thriving farm, patience is so important. It is so important. Yeah, being observant and patient and then letting go. Yeah.
I love it. Well, I could talk to you for, like, hours and hours. But thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And
it's been great.
Please check out Oko Farms on social media and the website.
Yay.
Yay.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week on The Hungry Society.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.